All right, so we're diving into a listener request today. They wanted to understand this Buck v. Bell case, and I gotta say, it's pretty heavy stuff. Really a Pandora's box of legal and ethical questions.
Yeah, for sure. It really forces us to confront, you know, some uncomfortable truths about America's past, how, like, societal biases, even if they're rooted in, like, bad science, can still influence the highest court in the land.
Right, the Supreme Court. Okay, so just to lay it out, this case is about Carrie Buck, a young woman who was labeled...
Feeble-minded.
Feeble-minded, right.
Yeah.
And because of that label, the state of Virginia decided to sterilize her. So, like, what? How did we even get to this point?
Well, you really have to understand the historical context. So this was like the, you know, the 1920s, the peak of the eugenics movement in the U.S.
Eugenics. Okay, for those who aren't familiar.
Basically, it was this idea that, like, poverty, what they call promiscuity, even things like feeble-mindedness were all hereditary.
They thought you could inherit those things.
Yeah, and that you could, like, eradicate them by preventing certain people, you know, the unfit from reproducing.
So this is like trying to breed out traits they didn't like. That's pretty messed up.
Yeah, it was. And unfortunately, this wasn't just some fringe theory. It actually, like, made its way into policy and law. And a lot of states ended up passing sterilization laws.
Wow. So Carrie Buck's case, this is like a real-life example of those laws in action.
Exactly. It shows how these ideas played out and hurt real people. So Carrie Buck was committed to the Virginia State Colony for Epileptics and Feeble-Minded.
Okay, and I'm guessing that feeble-minded label back then was not exactly a precise diagnosis.
Oh, yeah. Super broad and subjective. It could be used for, like, intellectual disabilities, mental illness, or even just, like, people who didn't conform to societal expectations.
So, like, basically anyone they decided didn't fit in.
Pretty much.
And was she the only one in her family deemed feeble-minded?
Mm. Well, they also labeled her daughter feeble-minded as well. And based on those classifications, the superintendent of the colony, he decided to...
sterilize her.
Yeah. He said it was for her own good and the good of society.
That's, I mean, you can only imagine how terrifying that must have been for her. And this ultimately led to the Supreme Court case.
It did. They appealed the case all the way up. And in a, well, pretty disturbing decision, the court, they actually upheld the Virginia sterilization law.
They agreed with sterilizing her. What was the vote, like 9-1?
8-1, actually. But the worst part is the majority opinion written by this Justice Oliver Wendell Holmes Jr. I mean, his words are just haunting.
Yeah, let's hear it. What did he say?
He wrote, and I quote, "Three generations of imbeciles are enough."
Wow. That sends chills down my spine. What kind of reasoning could justify that kind of statement?
You know, it's crazy, but Holmes's opinion reflects the common views of the eugenics movement back then. Like, he essentially argued that the state had this right, this duty to protect the public welfare, and that it was more important than Carrie Buck's individual rights.
So the good of society outweighs her right to, you know, control her own body.
That's basically what he argued. It was this chillingly utilitarian argument.
It's hard to wrap my head around this happening in the U.S., you know? Like, we're supposed to be all about individual liberty and freedom.
I know, and this wasn't that long ago either, 1927. It's a reminder that even in, quote-unquote, enlightened times, dangerous ideologies can take hold and cause real harm.
So we're talking limited understanding of genetics back then.
Right, and this whole idea of social Darwinism was really popular, you know, that whole misapplication of survival of the fittest to humans.
So this case really shows how those ideas, like, infected the highest levels of government.
Definitely.
Okay, but 8-1, that means someone on the court disagreed, right?
Yeah, Justice Pierce Butler dissented, but here's the frustrating part. The reasons for his dissent were never recorded.
What? Seriously? We don't know why he disagreed.
Nope, we can only speculate, which just adds another layer of tragedy to this whole case.
That's so frustrating. I mean, his reasoning could have been important. You know, maybe change things down the line. Like, what arguments did he have? Yeah. Why wasn't it recorded?
It's a real loss, not just for, like, legal scholarship, but also it shows that even while they were upholding this, you know, radical and intrusive law, they didn't even care to record the opposing viewpoint.
Yeah, that speaks volumes. This is a lot to process. We're going to need a minute to unpack all of this. You know, before we went to that thought break, we were talking about how Buck v. Bell has never actually been overturned. So, like, is that decision still, you know, good law? Could a state today try to do the same thing based on that case?
It's a good question. And it gets to the, you know, the heart of how legal precedents work and how they change over time. So while Buck v. Bell has never been officially reversed, it's what we consider bad law now.
Bad law, meaning?
Meaning that, like, legal experts and pretty much everyone today see it as a huge violation of basic human rights. So no, it's highly unlikely that any court today would ever uphold a forced sterilization law based on what they said back then in Buck v. Bell.
Okay, but if it's so obviously wrong, why hasn't it been, like, officially overturned? Has it just not come up again?
Well, there are a few reasons, I think. For one thing, the specific situation that led to Buck v. Bell, it's just not likely to happen again. You know, the eugenics movement has been, like, totally debunked, and people are much more aware of the ethical problems with forced sterilization.
Right, like, we know better now.
Exactly. Plus, there have been other Supreme Court decisions since then that have recognized a right to privacy. And that includes the right to decide about having children, you know, procreation.
So those later decisions kind of chipped away at Buck v. Bell without actually overturning it directly.
Yeah, pretty much. They basically gutted the legal basis for that old decision.
Okay, so it's like overruled in spirit, but not officially off the books. Still, it's kind of creepy that it's just sitting there, you know, like a ghost of bad legal decisions.
Yeah, it's definitely a stain on our history. And the fact that it's still there, even just as a symbol, reminds us that the law isn't fixed. We have to keep fighting to make sure our rights are protected.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So how about this? How does this case, you know, from almost 100 years ago, connect to the debates we see today about reproductive rights? Are there echoes of Buck v. Bell in those arguments?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, think about genetic testing and prenatal screening. The technology has come a long way since 1927, but those underlying ethical dilemmas, they're still there.
Like, who gets to decide what's a good or bad gene to have?
Exactly. And the potential for abuse is huge, you know? We have to be so careful about this kind of thinking.
It's almost like something out of, like, a dystopian novel, right?
Yeah.
The government telling you whether you can have kids or not. Based on some, you know, arbitrary standard.
Yeah, it's really scary. And Buck v. Bell shows how prejudice and fear can be used to justify these kinds of policies, and how even scientific language can be twisted to support harmful ideologies.
Right, it's like they use science to, like, legitimize discrimination.
Exactly. And that's why we always have to be, you know, super critical. We have to challenge assumptions and question the motives behind policies that try to control people's bodies and their choices about having children.
So basically, anytime someone tries to restrict reproductive freedom, no matter how they try to spin it, we need to be suspicious.
I think that's a good takeaway. We can't be complacent.
This whole case is so layered. It raises these fundamental questions about individual rights, about how much power the government should have. It's a lot to consider.
Okay, so we've been talking about, you know, the history and the social stuff around Buck v. Bell, but I want to, like, zoom in on the actual legal arguments in the case, because it wasn't just about, you know, the sterilization itself. It was about bigger ideas, right? Like due process, equal protection under the law.
Oh, yeah, totally. Carrie Buck's lawyers, they argued hard that the Virginia law violated her 14th Amendment rights.
Okay, and just so everyone's on the same page, what does that mean? What were they claiming?
So the 14th Amendment, it guarantees, like, basic rights to all citizens. And they said this sterilization law, it went against those rights.
Specifically
the Due Process Clause and the Equal Protection Clause.
Right. Okay. So break it down for us. What were their arguments based on those clauses? So for due process, they said the law was wrong because it allowed for sterilization without, like, real informed consent from Carrie Buck and without a fair hearing, you know, like she wasn't given a real chance to defend herself.
And the equal protection argument.
So that one was based on the idea that the law specifically targeted people they labeled feeble-minded, but it didn't apply to other people with, you know, different disabilities or who they thought were somehow, like, socially inadequate.
So basically, discrimination. Like, they were picking on a certain group of people and denying them the same rights as everyone else.
Exactly. It all goes back to those basic ideas of, you know, fairness and justice, which sadly the Supreme Court just ignored in this case.
They rejected those arguments. Why? How could they justify upholding a law that was so clearly discriminatory?
Well, Justice Holmes, the guy who wrote that awful majority opinion, he said the Virginia law had enough, you know, procedural safeguards, which is hard to believe considering how they decided who was feeble-minded and how there wasn't really any true informed consent.
And what about the equal protection argument?
Yeah, they basically brushed that aside too. They said the state had this, like, super important interest in preventing what they called hereditary defects.
So even though Carrie Buck was, you know, in their eyes, feeble-minded, she still didn't have the same rights as other citizens to make choices about her own body and her future.
That's the heartbreaking part. They basically said her individual rights weren't as important as what they thought was best for society. And it shows how dangerous it is when the government gets to make these kinds of life-altering decisions about people based on these, you know, made-up categories and without their real consent.
It makes you think about all the issues we're dealing with today, right? Like informed consent, bodily autonomy, the right to make your own choices about your health.
Yeah, it's all connected.
So stepping back a bit, what does this case, Buck v. Bell, teach us about, you know, the potential dangers of giving the government too much power, especially when it comes to people who are already vulnerable?
It's like a warning from history. It shows how fragile individual rights can be when you have prejudice and fear driving the decisions. I mean, they used bad science, social biases, anxieties about people who were different, all of that to justify policies that target and hurt marginalized groups. Buck v. Bell really shows why we need a strong legal system that protects individual rights, even when those rights go against what some people think is the greater good.
That's a powerful point. So as we wrap up our deep dive into this incredibly complex case, is there a final thought you want to leave our listeners with?
I think the biggest question that comes out of Buck v. Bell, and it's still relevant today, is this.
Oh.
Who gets to decide what's normal, what's desirable in a society? If, like Justice Holmes said, three generations of imbeciles are enough, well, then who gets to define what imbecility even is?
It's a chilling question, and it applies to way more than just this case. It's about how people in power try to force their ideas of normal onto everyone else.
Exactly. We have to constantly question those ideas and fight for the rights of all people, especially those who are most at risk of being abused by those in power.
That's a powerful message to end on. Thanks for taking this deep dive with us. We hope this has inspired you to keep learning and keep fighting for a more just world.